13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind? Never forget!
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Monday, and it is the 23rd of May in the year 2005. I hope you had a lovely weekend, folks. Doggone it, it got cold here again. We've had a couple of days in the 70s, and one day that it went up to 80, and it actually was down to 47 here yesterday. It's not nice. Anyway, I'm glad you're with us this evening, and I hope you've been enjoying a little better weather than we have. I shouldn't be complaining. Let me do our spiritual message here. This is from The Course in Miracles. I did this last week. The sight of Christ is all there is to see. The song of Christ is all there is to hear. The hand of Christ is all there is to hold. There is no journey but to walk with Him. And Alan Watt is with us tonight. And Alan, thanks for being here, my dear.
It's a pleasure again.
Yes, thank you. Oops, I better hit my record button here. I realized that I left that conference report in the kitchen, and I wanted to bring that up tonight, but the conference report on that emergency spending bill, remember where they passed the national ID?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have to go get it. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
The main thing is, folks, I did get the copy of the conference report in the mail last Friday, and everything that we've heard about this bill is true, and one of the worst parts about it is that it's wide open to change. And the secretary, it says, the definition of the secretary is the Secretary of Homeland Defense, and the secretary has been given the authority to make any changes in the requirements or any of the data that goes into this new identification card. And Alan,
yeah.
You know, the thing is, as I was reading it and I had told you this, what I've realized is, though, they're saying that it has to be totally, all states have to be in compliance within 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
The states, from what I can gather, at least here in Pennsylvania, they're pretty much there right now.
Mm-hmm.
They've been getting into compliance probably for the last 10, 12 years.
Sure, sure.
And so one of the, they call it federal recognition. This is how they're doing it. And see, they're literally admitting that they cannot mandate to the states. But my, if a state doesn't comply and have this federal recognition identification card / driver's license and or, they won't be able to get on an airplane.
Yeah.
They won't be able to go into a federal building. Now, what if you what if you were ordered into court for something, into a federal court?
Yeah, well, I'm sure then they'd force your thumbprints anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And do all that kind of stuff. In fact, they could use all of the same recognition and take it all there, and hand you your court pass, which would be the same thing.
What do you mean? You take all the recognition?
Well, if they want to, I mean, this is going to be used everywhere, and of course, the courts themselves, I'm sure, will have the same equipment, not only to decode the cards, but also to make them up, you know, and to add to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone going through the court system will have to have that information then put into their card. Yeah.
Oh, that they had a
yeah
some type of a legal action.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, everything will eventually be in there. Well, one of the things that has not been, nobody has mentioned this that I know of, but I'll tell you the first thing that I thought about are the federal highways, Alan.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Because all the states, look at all the highways that the states have turned over to the federal government.
Yes.
And what is that going to mean? If you're driving on a federal highway inside your own state and you get stopped, you don't have a federal recognition ID card.
Yeah.
So,
and it's also going to be used down the road for the cashless society. Yeah.
With the little pings in it.
Yes, it will be the only card
money
you'll need. You know. And it's a step-by-step process, of course. And they've been working on this for years. And they tried to introduce the same card in Britain in 1998. And, of course, in 1998, the Cold War was over, nothing was happening, and the public didn't go for it. You see, what's the problem, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so it fell flat, but so they simply had 9/11, and we had Mr. Blair blaring off with all his lies, and so now they're going ahead and they're actually issuing them, and they started last week issuing those cards in Britain.
The same ones?
The same ones, yeah.
And they'll be good to come into the U.S. or to Canada, or?
Yes, I'm sure it's really a global ID.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that will be passport, everything in the one card. And, of course, they do definitely want to use it in conjunction with the cashless society, because they talked about this years ago, that they would do this. And they're actually doing it now.
Hey, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
That book you were telling me about, Sumner Wells' book,
yeah,
A Time for Decision,
mm-hmm,
that was written in 1944, right?
Yeah, it was published
then.
I think he began it early in the World War II.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you, some of the things, the statements that you shared with me from that book back in 1944, you know, the way they described it, I told you I went into ABE Books and found it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I've got a place where I'm going to order it.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that the president had sent him over to Europe, that this was the reason that the book was written,
mm-hmm,
that the president had sent him over to Europe to see if there was ever going to be an opportunity for peace.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, and also he had been, I think, Assistant Secretary of State for the State Department, and so he had a long career in politics up until then. And then he was transferred, as you say, as the sort of go-between for Europe and the U.S. But in the map, there's a map in the book where they actually separate Germany, and he gives the reasons for the separation.
Now, this was in 1944, before the war was over.
Yeah, and as I say, I think he, judging from reading it, you can tell that he started it earlier in the war. Maybe at the very beginning, in fact, and so it was put out after. It was probably finished in 43, I'd imagine.
Uh huh.
But anyway, he's Germany partitioned.
The east and west.
Yeah, he gives the reasons for it. He said.
Does he say that the east is going to be given to the communists?
It was on the map, but he doesn't say so. But you know darn well, since it's all shade, all the Soviet side is shaded in the map.
There you go.
But he said the reason for it being that the youth have had years of indoctrination in Hitlerism, and to leave them united would cause too much problems, and so they'd have to have them separated for with two different systems running it, basically. I mean, you couldn't have one country like Britain or the US running both sides.
Uh-huh.
You'd have to give it to the supposed enemy, which was Russia.
No, and, Alan, they were our allies.
Oh, then, yeah, but they changed again their mask
yeah.
afterwards.
Right.
And Uncle Joe, went along with it. But they said that it would probably take 50 years or just over 50 years or so before they'd allow both halves to come together again. Which is exactly what they did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, he even goes into the building up of China, which he said was one of the best allies that they had and one of the best trading partners, you know. Now, China at that time was mainly a third world country.
Yep.
But, and the only thing that Sumner Wells and his ancestors had done was to put opium into China, because that's where most of them made their money, you know, their fortunes. But so in a sense, I guess they were a good business partner. But anyway, he said that the U.S. would have to finance these countries, and especially China, to bring them up to a first world status. So everything really was planned, I'm sure, before World War II. And these guys in the CFR, the Council on Foreign Relations, which is the American branch of the Royal Institute of International Affairs in Britain, they had the whole plan finished before the war was finished.
For the three wars.
Yes, uh-huh.
And remember, mm-hmm. in 1906, mm-hmm. Norman Dodd,
yeah.
getting into the Carnegie minutes of their meetings, it was 1906 when they decided that they were going to have a war, and a good place to start it would be in the Balkans, because
yes.
there was a lot of unrest there anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's where it was, wasn't it? Where that...
yes, the Archduke.
The Archduke was assassinated.
Yes.
And it's amazing to realize they waited until the U.S. Congress had passed the Federal Reserve Act, because they wanted the American people to pay for it.
Oh, yes.
The U.S.
You can't have a war without the borrowing and ability to pay off the debt. So you need taxation. Yeah. That's standard in any big war. But H.G. Wells wrote a book, The Shape of Things to Come, and I think it was 1907. And he talked about the upcoming wars with Germany. And he goes through this whole scenario, and H.G. Wells got all of his material from Royal Institutes and Council of Foreign Relations professors who supplied him with the data, and he had to write stories around this data, you see, to encourage the public who read the books into this mode of thinking that we do need world government. And so he wrote The Shape of Things to Come, with a war with Germany, with a war in the air as well, you know. And he had three world wars, and he said the third one will start in Basra, which is Iraq, you know. And sure enough, here we have it's the third and final one. And then after that, he said there'll be a scientific elite running the world, experts, all scientists, that's in psychology, psychiatry, physics, chemistry, everything, sociology. And he also said that there would be a police of the air who would go around those places and countries who didn't succumb and accept their authority, and they would gas them and spray stuff from the air. And we're being sprayed now from the air, you know.
Yeah.
So nothing surprises me, because it's an old plan. And these characters do work on their plans. They never give them up. And when they have settled on a plan, even if it takes 100 years, they work towards it.
Yeah, they sure are patient, aren't they?
Very patient. They are the builders, you see. It's like the old... They use Freemasonry uses the builders of masons, or true brick masons. They use the terminology of the builders because they build society. That's what Freemasonry means. They shape society. They shape your thoughts, your culture, and the changes in your culture. And just like when they built the cathedrals across Europe, the Comasines were brought in to do that.
The what?
The Comasines. They had been initially a priesthood at the north of Italy, around Lake Como, and they were the ones, the experts in architecture, and they planned the cathedrals and drew them up. And it would take sometimes five or six generations of stonemasons to complete it. So they use that terminology still today as they build and shape society. And they have puns on their words because they love to use, just like the ancient Egyptians had puns on words too. And of course the Bilderbergers, everyone's heard about them, supposedly took their name after the first hotel where they held their first meeting in the Netherlands. And that the Bilderbergers are builders of the mountain. That's what it means. You see?
Builders of the mountain?
Yeah. Yeah.
What is the mountain?
The mountain is a symbol of their perfect society. It's like a pyramid. Yeah. That's what a pyramid was. It was a perfectly shaped mountain. In other words, they used a natural mountain as a source. That is nature. They love nature. And how can you perfect nature? So they shaped it all geometrically. And of course, the plan was to use that symbol to shape and perfect all of society and perfect that which was left imperfect, as they say, which is man himself. And as we see today, they're well on their way. You turn on newscast shows today, and most of what you'll hear is experts giving you advice on how to do something, or how to behave in a certain situation.
Or how to feel.
Or how to feel, yeah.
And what to think and say.
Mm-hmm. So it's all social indoctrination.
They're all squared, is that right, Alan?
That's right, a perfect ashlar, as they say. You've been squared, yeah. A natural stone is sort of roundish. There's nothing truly geometrical in nature apart from perhaps snowflakes, you know, under a microscope.
Yeah.
But that's what they plan to do, is to shape society. They're the builders. They shape the minds of the public. They indoctrinate, and that's why you wear the little Masonic square hat when you graduate. You know.
Yeah.
You've been squared. So yeah, we are in their system.
You I remember when you were talking about that,
mm-hmm.
and then you mentioned the song "Another Brick in the Wall" or "Just a Brick in the Wall."
That's the Pink Floyd.
Uh-huh. Pink Floyd.
Yep.
Right after you talked about that, it's been quite a while ago, and maybe you would, maybe for our listeners who, maybe you did explain it just now, but anyway, right after you talked about that, there was an article in the newspaper that Lily found, or else it was an AP on the radio,
mm-hmm.
and they were remember you mentioned the hammer?
Yeah.
And the song, "If I Had a Hammer."
Mm-hmm.
And they used the hammer to hammer out the, well, that they were using all of those words in that newspaper article, Alan.
Uh-huh.
Hammer, 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 mm-hmm. bricks and blocks and, you know, et cetera.
Sure.
It was all there, mm-hmm. and it was within a couple days after you talked about it.
Yes.
And then they giggle, probably.
Oh, they do, yeah.
Who gives them their words, these journalists? Is it the editor when they write an article or something, then the editor changes the words? And I mean,
yes, he can go in there and change them and delete certain passages that maybe they've gone overboard with.
Yeah, because I remember not too long ago reading something that a former journalist, and he said that nothing, maybe it actually had to do with the Second World War,
uh-huh.
but nothing that they wrote ever really appeared as they wrote it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's correct. And in fact, if you go through history, even recent history, you have these amazing quotations by famous people at the right time, when the atomic bomb was first tested, and Oppenheimer supposedly made his famous statement, "I have become Prometheus, the destroyer of worlds." And of course, that he never said that at all, but they have these quotes ready to put in their mouth, you see. And
what did they say he said?
He said, "I have become Prometheus." That's the ancient god that stole fire from the heavens.
Okay.
Intellect, you know. And he says, and the destroyer of worlds. And of course, he didn't say that at all. But they always have these lines ready for the famous people that they present to us. And we believe it generally, you know. So they're very good at taking. Even Winston Churchill had a whole staff dedicated to searching out the old classics, the Greek mythology and so on, to get quotations and Shakespeare that he could use in his speeches. And then, of course, once he'd picked out okayed the ones they'd picked for him, then he'd get his main script writers to write it into a script for him, you know. And he'd read it off over the radio with his fireside chats. Yeah.
He and FDR.
Yeah. So everything is a technique, and the public must never know. They must believe the image that's presented to them as it's presented, never realizing that nothing that you see is happenstance. There's no off-the-cuff remarks from any of them. They're all scripted, you know. And that's the world we live in. As Shakespeare said, he said, "All the world's a stage and we are but the players."
Yeah.
And of course, that's what these guys are. They're playing to us. And it's a live theater audience. And especially in wartime, it's the theater of war.
Yeah.
So they use that terminology.
Theater of war.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And H.G. Wells, again, who was a propagandist for MI6, who employed him, he's the guy who was given the credit for calling it the First World War, both the Great War, which is a Masonic term. Whenever you see anything great, like Alexander the Great, etc., they mean one from the mystery religions has started it and in control of it. And he also used the term the War to End All Wars, which was the slogan they sold the public on so that the guys would sign up, you know. So they're very good at propaganda.
What did they mean by that, the war to end all wars?
Well, they'd hope to get the lion in, the League of Nations, or LON, which is another term for lion, you know. They hope to get that in as world government after the World War I. They thought they'd slaughter so many people that we'd all beg for peace. And while we're begging for peace, then they'd put on the conditions that we couldn't live as we had lived before. So, in other words, they were upgrading their system into a new mode of being. But, of course, the public didn't quite go for it. They were used to the old system, which they hadn't figured out wasn't theirs either. It was just the system that they were used to.
What would it have meant? The League of Nations was originally called the League to Enforce Peace.
Yes. Uh-huh.
What would the LEP mean? What would the...
Well, LEP is short for leopard, you know. In a sense, so they're like these little quips with things. So you have a lion on one side, the leopard with the other.
Uh-huh.
You can go back to Nimrod. He's got the checkered board fur coat on, the ermine type fur that we see today on royalty. They use that black specked on top of the white fur. That's a sign of royalty.
I see.
So they love these symbols. These are ancient symbols going all the way back to Babylon, and no doubt before.
Alan.
Yeah.
This, I guess, it occurred to me this evening, as I told you, I had a conversation with my friend in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't talked in a long time. They had a situation there, and she wanted to talk to me about it because, well, actually, her daughter did.
Mm-hmm.
Because her daughter finally woke up and sees it. I mean, what's happening. And Jerry and I haven't spoken in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't have a short wave, so she hasn't been listening to the broadcast. And I said, "Jerry, there's just so much to catch up on."
Mm-hmm.
Because the first thing people have to understand is that we were all born into a huge, grotesque lie, mm-hmm. and that everything we ever thought we knew is not.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I have anything to say that would be of help,
mm-hmm.
Because it's like, okay, what kind of activity? And just for our listeners, they were having a meeting, the lady in Colorado who was beaten by an illegal alien.
Mm-hmm.
They like to call them undocumented immigrants, I think.
Uh-huh.
But anyway,
you mean they're not called insurgents?
No, they're not insurgents.
Yeah.
No, probably the group that was meeting were called insurgents.
Uh-huh.
But there were about 50 people, and they had rented a restaurant, a bar and grill, to have their meeting in. And there was a evidently local talk show host there that was had gotten the thing together. And the woman who had gotten beaten was at the mic talking to the people, and suddenly she said a Latino ran out of the kitchen. I asked her, you know, who was he? I mean, what right did he have to do this anyway? Well, he was the kitchen manager is all.
Uh-huh.
But he ran out of the kitchen, grabbed the mic, and told them to pay up their bill and get the hell out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, you know, didn't make any fuss about it. They paid their bill, but they left. And in fact, they talked to the manager of the restaurant, and he wanted them to leave because they were talking about this situation. And then they went to the park, and the next thing you know, the police were making them disband. And she said what Debbie has finally understood is that our First Amendment rights are gone.
Mm-hmm.
But what should we do? And okay, we sit here and talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
And I wonder if I don't want us to be in a position where it is rendering people in their minds a hopelessness,
mm-hmm.
or a helplessness. Do you understand what I'm saying, Alan?
Well, if they continue blaming the side effects of plans, they'll get nowhere.
Right.
They have to go to the source of the cause of it. And of course, it's no secret that many years ago, when they talked about uniting the whole continent and doing away with the borders, and of course they did that officially on the 27th of March. Bush signed that agreement that we're now one big fortress America, and within 3 to 4 years the borders will be gone.
Actually, that newspaper article said they restructured a continent in an afternoon.
Yes, he met with the Prime Minister of Canada.
Yeah.
And Mexico.
Yep.
And agreement, yep.
And according to this, Vincente Fox,
mm-hmm.
is in his last term.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, G.W. Bush is.
Yeah.
And they said that Paul Martin in Canada is having so many problems that it's not likely that he'll be in another term.
Mm-hmm. So, it doesn't matter who they put in front because they don't run their countries.
No.
They don't run them.
We know that, but...
And in fact, H.G. Wells, in, again, 1919, H.G. Wells wrote about that. He said that they had achieved their objective because now every bureaucracy in every nation would have its counterpart in the League of Nations, and they could bypass their governments and go straight to their fellow bureaucracy in the League of Nations.
Yeah. We have a break coming up here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it'll be just about a minute and a half or so.
Yeah.
I'm going to be away from the mic.
Mm-hmm.
And would you, after the break, would you remind our listeners about the books that mm-hmm. you have available and how they can get them?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And be sure to give your phone number and address and everything like that. And folks, we'll be right back. Get your pen, please. And remember that this broadcast is listener-sponsored. We're getting behind on this doggone airtime bill again, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's just that times are so tough, or maybe we've just run the gamut. I don't know. We'll be back, folks. Stay with us.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25. Or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. Don't do internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dog.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Hello. Yeah, this is Alan Watts here. I'm going to give you my address now if you want to order the books I have. The third one is getting sent out next week. So there are three of them. They're $25 each. And you can contact me. It's Alan Watt, W-A-T-T. And the address is Site, that's S-I-T-E, 41, Box 4. And it's Estaire, which is E-S-T-A-I-R-E, Ontario, Canada. And the postal code is P for Peter, 3, E for Elizabeth, 4, N for Nora, 1. Or you can phone me at 705-695-0416. But I go into detail with the types of systems that we're living under and where they came from. And it's an eye-opener, I think, for most people. As far as the books to check up on what's actually happening, I was thinking of putting a few into the end of the third edition, so you can go and look up the histories of the system that we're living under, and you see how far back it goes, because it's been here for an awful long time, and people don't realize that in 1941 Churchill and Roosevelt signed an agreement for the NATO pact, basically, North Atlantic Treaty Organization. And in that treaty, they had a system worked out, and they signed it into the treaty, that they would make a world system, a federation of the world, based on the federation of the United States. And of course, if you notice, the U.S. is now completing its mission, the mission that it was, I believe, created to do, Novus Ordo Seclorum, the New World Order. It's actually finishing off the plan. It's forcing what's called democracy, which is a world bank running the show with a central bank puppet there, and a taxation system and the social system of the United States. They're forcing it on the last Muslim countries, which don't have the central banking system. They don't have income tax, and they don't have usury. So it's the last part of the function of the United States we're seeing being implemented right now.
I'm back here, Alan.
Uh-huh.
Did they get your phone number and address? And
yes, uh-huh.
Did you say the phone number twice?
I didn't see it twice, no.
Well, it's good to do
but
that.
It's 705-695-0416.
And you said your address twice?
No, just once.
Well, we should probably do it one more time for our shortwave listeners.
Yep. Yeah, that's Site 41, S-I-T-E 41, Box 4, Estaire, like Fred Estaire, only with an E in front, E-S-T-A-I-R-E, Ontario, and the postal code is P for Peter, 3, E for Elizabeth, 4, N for Nora, 1, and also Canada too. Put Canada down because there's two or three Ontarios in the U.S. And if you do send an order, please enclose a postal, an international postal order, which you get from your post office.
A money order.
And it has to be international. I can't cash the
Or you'll take the slave credits, the FRNs.
Yes,
The cash.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No, I was just saying there about the system and how old it is, that the public have no idea that there's one reality given to us throughout our lives that comes through education and then reinforced for the rest of our life by the media and magazines to give you this matrix idea of the world you live in. But there's always another one which actually runs the show, and the public have no input into, and it's run by very elite and wealthy people.
And this situation with immigration, part of the plan, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what America was meant to be. Of course, they're doing it in all of the developed English-speaking countries, aren't they, Alan?
Oh, yeah, and all of Europe, too, are coming into it.
That's what I mean.
And it's exactly the same process from and the law is, actually, because I watched a program in it recently. When a country joins the European Union, from the day that it's declared, it's now in force. So when Bush and Fox and Martin met down in, it was actually Waco where they signed the deal, that was the legal announcement of the unification. And then they said that in Europe it takes 3 to 4 years before they completely take down the border. And that's what we're going to have here. That's why they want the ID cards out now. You see? So it's an old plan. And Jack Satali wrote about it in 1990. And he was at the United Nations. He was a top advisor for François Mitterrand. François Mitterrand, who was the president of France, believed he was a reincarnation of the pharaoh, Ramesses II.
Oh, you're kidding.
No. And he got the pyramid, the glass pyramid built outside the museum there in Paris, and it has 666 panes of glass in it. So they love these little messages and so on, you know. But anyway, Jack Satali did write the book, the Millennium, in 1990, and he said that the next great immigration rush will be out of the United States. He said after the countries of Latin America flood through the gates, and he said initially it will be like the barbarian hordes that assaulted Rome, the Vandals and the Goths and so on. He said there will be criminals too coming up, the gangs will come up and pillage and plunder. He said, but eventually, he said, after a period of time, maybe 30 years, they'll settle down a little bit. But by that time, the industry will all be gone from the United States, and the next boat people will be the U.S. citizens leaving the shores of the U.S., going abroad looking for work. So this is an agenda from the top. And we are blaming the side effects, the people that
yes.
are coming in, who are being encouraged to come in through the agreements between Bush and Fox, you know, and all the other bureaucrats who really do the work. So we have to keep our sights on who really is causing this to happen.
And what?
That's who you should be throwing your all your time and energy at, are the people demanding to know these people. Who set up this system, who planned it, and who are implementing it. because the government is complicit with it. They're doing nothing to stop it, since it is the agenda. And that's the bewildering thing for most people who still live in the first matrix, which is the one they've given you. They can't figure out why the government, their own government, is not stopping it. So they've got to seek and then demand that their own government do something about it. Because at the moment, it's just causing tensions between
the
incomers.
And here in the States, it should be done at the local and state level.
Yes, but you know that the big boys are all in the pockets
exactly.
of the bigger boys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it's a Masonic system. I mean, in all of the Masonic books, including Albert Pike, he wrote about the Brotherhood of Man, the International Brotherhood of Man, and the borderless world to come, etc., you know.
You know, another thing I was wondering about, this, you know, the Mexicans, the people there from Mexico,
mm-hmm.
who are saying we're going to take back our country,
mm-hmm.
our land.
Yeah.
Well, it was stolen from them, Alan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was wrested from them
yeah.
by warfare.
Sure.
And they... As you said, people get angry with those who are coming in.
Mm-hmm.
They're only being used
yes.
To further this plan. Mm-hmm. But my question is, was this planned that long ago when they took the land
mm-hmm.
and called it the U.S. of A., mm-hmm. California, Texas, what is it, Arizona and New Mexico?
Yeah.
Wasn't that all Mexican territory?
Yeah, pretty well.
Uh-huh. And did they plan that so that they could have this divisiveness and this riotness and...
Well, they did.
And chaos.
This is how far back... This, it's actually older, but you can go back to say, the Normans that came in and took over Europe. And they created the nations of Europe. And these Normans, all this royalty at the top of each country that they created as a nation, they then put borders around. And then they taxed the public who lived within those borders. And so they'd always have threats of warfare and skirmishes between their relatives, and the peasants would die and then demand peace and then pay more of taxes. That's how the whole system works. So they created the borders to get us to be industrious and patriotic. And you have to remember that Karl Marx was trained by some of the best bankers on the planet, who have very, very old archives of history, as opposed to public libraries. Public libraries are for the public, you see. But these guys have archives of history, just like the Vatican. And Karl Marx talks about the global system. Before he said it can become global, we must create and push for nationalism. Nationalism is a phase on the road towards globalism,
mm-hmm.
because nationalism creates central governments. And central governments then take over from all the little governments underneath them, and they standardize the law across the land, the law for everything, you know. And that's the system they've all gone through. They've all been highly nationalized, and they call them wars of national liberation. And now you go into the next phase, which is the taking down of the borders, because while they were nationalizing, you didn't realize that the guys at the top of your country and every country were all in cahoots and making the same laws for your country as they were for every other country, so that when they took down the borders, you'd all have exactly the same laws in place. It was all ready for world government.
Including the ingredients in frozen pizza.
Exactly, yeah.
That is so insidious.
Yes.
I mean, you talk about details, Alan.
Well, you have to realize, even in the group that at Yale University, the Skull and Bones, which George Bush and other ones went to, they have a place called the War Room. And all of you, the high lodges, have a war room. And the war room is where they plan their strategy of war on the public. And we don't realize that even as we think we're living in times of peace, these guys are actually making war on the public constantly. And they change your morality, they change your culture through fads, through promotions, and they can make you wear whatever they want you to wear to be trendy, but they design everything for you, your thoughts, your music, how you'll feel, what you'll be guilty about or not guilty about. It's all given to us. We are infinitely malleable, as they say, and infinitely adaptable. So Albert Pike also talked about the war, the ongoing war of the great work, and how they were the shepherds and we were the sheep, you see. They make the plans. And Pike also said, we never start a premature revolution. In other words, they go over it like a battle plan, a cultural change or a social change, and they go through all the expected reactions from different types of people, and they already have their plans of action to go into place when these organizations will come against them. So it's an ongoing war, you see. And while they're doing that with the adults, that they've already implemented a graduated system in kindergarten right through their schooling, so that those children who go into kindergarten at 2 are already conditioned scientifically for the conditions and changes they will experience in their life.
Yes, and I heard them talking about this in the school-to-work thing when I was a C-SPAN junkie,
mm-hmm.
and over and over and over again, because they were talking about the preschool,
uh-huh.
that they want every 5-year-old child ready to enter kindergarten.
Yes.
In other words, get them pre-prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is like, you were talking about the morals.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an item in the newspaper that somebody emailed to me, a kindergarten class, where they were promoting homosexuality to these little children.
Mm-hmm.
The father of the little boy told the principal that he wanted to be informed when they were doing this so that he could opt his son out, come and get him and take him home.
Uh-huh.
And he came to the school, and they wouldn't let him go into the room evidently, and he went and got his little boy, and they arrested this father,
uh-huh.
Alan.
Yeah, yeah. We are in compulsory indoctrination times, and that's what it is, compulsory indoctrination. They have so many young boys now drugged with Ritalin and so on, and of course now they're going a step further and blaming bad genes, bad gene mixing, so they're back into eugenics big time. It's never gone away really, and there's more things to come, because the system that they're bringing in is a scientifically managed system. It doesn't mean that the sciences are true or correct. But as long as the ones who implement it believe so, they're going to force it on the public, including annual psychological evaluations with the mandatory treatments to follow. So we're going into their beautiful utopia, which is a hell for the people, but if it worked, it would be a utopia for the elite who rule the world. What they do not want is free thought. They're doing all their best to stifle it, and making it illegal to even ask questions on certain topics. And when that happens, you know you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And trouble is coming. But it also means that they're starting to break when they start to use violence on people and try to forbid them from using their own minds and inquire into anything that they want to inquire into. There's trouble when they have to come out with the batons and the handcuffs. And so that's their weak link. They show the brutes as they are, you know. And that does not gain public support. And so they'll go through the same old techniques like the robots they are, and they'll try to bash it into the public eventually, but that will fail. That will fail. You know. And that is their weak link. They cannot bring on everything that they want to bring on simply by indoctrination through movies and plays and so on, and documentaries. It comes to the time when they come out with the big stick, and that's when the public see them for what they are, you know.
Yeah, when they overstep their, when
yeah.
they get as blatant as they've become.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they've been preparing an internal army for years. They've been building it up for years for when they pull the plug on the economy, what's left of it. And I think they'll do it once the job over in the Middle East is over. That's the last task that the U.S. has to perform before it then must succumb down into the system that it helped create. And so this is a very old plan, and the U.S. was born for this. Even Benjamin Franklin said it. He said, and Jefferson, they both said, made the same statement, that the United States, I can, what is it to be, he said. He said, a light for the world. And he said, I can envision a world federation run by 12 wise men, which is right out of the Kabbalah.
Oh, man.
And so Jefferson said the same thing, and that's exactly what they signed in 1941 with the North Atlantic Treaty Pact, was that the United States system of a federation would be basically forced on every other country in the world. Yeah. So that's how far back it goes.
And you know, the thing that amazed me to find out, and that I got it out of that history. Anyway, where every single war that the U.S., that the American people have fought in, have been to get more territory.
Yeah.
I mean, the islands and, you know, all, everything, the everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they said it right in the book.
Yeah.
Began its empire building, Alan.
Well, that's why you have an empire state, you know.
Yep.
And you have a big obelisk there called a skyscraper, which is the empire state building. You know, it's and no one ever thinks, well, what empire are they talking about?
You know? No, no. That's right.
Mm-hmm. And it's world empire. Of course it is. And back in the 1960s, the CFR and the Royal Institute of International Affairs, which has a branch in every British Commonwealth country, in Canada it's called the Canadian Institute for International Affairs, they held a meeting in England, London, to discuss which country would promote the global culture for the coming years. And they decided then, okay, that Hollywood, primarily America, would promote the system of culture creation for the world. So they are the culture creators.
But we didn't know that we were going to be controlled by those who call themselves Jews.
Well, they've and always been in that business.
Yes, they have, haven't they?
Of entertainment, as they call it. And it's as old as can be.
Well, it goes far beyond entertainment, Alan.
Well, all entertainment has always been this way. We don't realize it. When a person's been giving a lecture, for instance, if you're sitting in a school, you have the ability to accept what you hear or parts of what you hear and disregard others. That's your mental censorship kicking in. Your ability to think for yourself, but that guard is not up when you're being entertained. And so the ideas expressed in the movie or the play penetrate past your guard.
Yes.
And go into your subconscious. And then you and your life will start to emulate in certain situations that you've seen portrayed. You will emulate what you saw and behave in the way that you saw the people behave in the movie. And that's easily done nowadays, you know. The Tavistock Institute were the main advisors for the Coronation Street series, which began in the 1960s and is still ongoing. And on that series, back in the 70s, they showed you the intermarriage, the troubles between incoming people from India, and the mixing and so on, and the characters portrayed their parts well. And then when the real thing actually happened, the public acted in the same way. They saw how the actors had handled the situations, and they emulated what they saw. So everything that you see under the guise of entertainment is actually conditioning. And Plato said that 2,400 years ago. He said the traveling players that come to Greece, it was mandatory that the whole city had to attend, each person had to attend, including the slaves, had to attend these shows at least once for every traveling troupe. Because he says that's where the culture is given to the people, that's where the changes in the culture are given to the people, and even he said the fashion industry, the industry was the word he used, it gives them the fashion. And he also talked about the music and how important it was to indoctrinate the young. So this is an ancient technique that's been used for thousands of years. And a fantastic example of that was on the news, in CBC News tonight, and it was from Britain, where the storekeepers are now banning teenagers who wear those pullover running tops with the hood on it.
They call them hoodies.
Yeah, and that's where you get the word hoodlum. People don't realize this is an old technique they brought back in fashion for today.
Why are they banning them?
But of course, through this whole thing, they didn't tell you.
But why are they banning them?
Because they're having so much crime with people putting up their hoods and going into stores, so the cameras can't recognize their face to keep their heads down.
Oh.
And of course, they're standing there with the baggy pants, you know, with the crotch down to their knees, and these sweatshirts on with a hood on it, and over the conversation, you hear the rap music going. You know, the jungle music, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, not once did they mention where the children all got this fashion from, or where their ideas came from. And of course, it's much music. The BBC gives it to them. So the elite give you the problem, and then they come out with the solution, which is more laws and ways to behave, and more checkpoints on the streets and so on. That's so typical. But they give you the problem. If they wanted to make ballerina costumes very trendy for masculine males, they'd do so. They could do it.
Yes, they would. Yes, they would. And
yeah.
I just heard our 1 minute.
Oh yeah.
Warning here, so we're gonna have to wrap this up tonight. Thank you so much for being here with us, and folks, if you didn't get my address. I want to give it to you once again. If you would like to see the broadcast continue, maybe we've run the course. It's Jackie Pat True, P.O. Box 190, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, Pennsylvania, 16936. It's $140 every hour that we do this broadcast, and it really builds up in a hurry. Alan, thank you so much.
That's a pleasure.
And folks, we'll be back with you tomorrow night. So be good night, folks.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
This is Nicholas from Presence of God Ministry.